BBC Six Music Podcasts.
Six Music.
This is a free download from the BBC.
Find out more at bbc.co.uk/sixmusic.
And now, Adam and Joe.
Adam. Jojo.
Adam. Dum.
Jojo.
Jojo.
You're supposed to go at the end.
You sang my name.
You said you
were going to
do
you
the
sang
end.
My name. How dare you sing my name?
Yeah, because you scrambled my mind circuits. You were supposed to do
name,
the end.
Not your name.
Doodle doo. You're supposed to do the end part.
Bam. Jojo. I was being modest. I thought I can't end this song with a barrage of Joes. I must share this. It should go. Adam, Jojo.
Yeah.
Like that. That's what I was thinking. And as I was thinking that, of course, time ran away with me.
Right.
And the whole thing ended up a pig's ear hole.
As so often happens.
A massive old bucket of slop.
With us.
A gigantic cackpot.
What was that then that we were just singing there?
That was the Blinder Data theme.
Blinder Data!
It's an old programme from the 50s.
It
used to be presented by the Queen.
It used to be presented by the Queen of England, and it would last the whole of the weekend. So as soon as Saturday morning began, Blinder Data would start, and the Queen would come out, and she'd go, Laura, Blinder Data today!
Most game shows, this is for younger listeners, most game shows in those days used to be based around hiding things behind screens.
Yeah.
Because that was...
We got behind a screen today, Laura, people!
Wow, she almost sounds like a hideous racist stereotype, the Queen.
No. She's from in Liverpool. Laura laughs we're having today. Welcome, Blinder Data.
Say something about a hat. I'm going to have to buy a new hat.
Oh, I got a lovely hat, Blinder Data.
Yeah, you're not getting it, are you?
What do you mean?
She used to say they were going to be weddings, weren't there, all the time? The blind date weddings.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So she used to always say, I wonder if I'm going to have to buy a new hat.
Oh, lovey, look at you getting on. Laura, gonna get a new hat now for this.
Wow.
And it would last the whole weekend.
The whole weekend, from 9 in the morning on a Saturday.
Do you remember the name of the announcer?
Yeah.
Graham Skidmore.
Graham, was that really what he was called?
I think so. Graham Skidpants.
Graham
Skidmarks.
Wow. Why don't they bring that programme back? Because it was rubbish!
Wait, what?
It wasn't right.
Back off.
That was just an attractive
Joking
answer.
Joking aside.
That was just an attractive answer.
Attractive in what way?
Just, you know, exciting.
It was way...
Provocative.
Very provocative.
No, it was good. We used to watch it a lot.
I loved it.
Didn't
man.
We?
Yeah.
Imagine the hours of our young lives we wasted watching that.
Blinder Data!
Loved it. Absolutely great. What you got instead? Saturdays is still looking all right to me, though. You got double Harry Hill, boy.
Yeah, Harry Hill has really cheered things up.
7:30 or whatever it is. You know, the only problem I have with Hill, and he's a genius, love him, is he's got a weird thing about fat people. Have you noticed this, watching his show? Like, he's got a lot of jokes at the expense of fat people. He has a running gag in TV Burp about the lady from EastEnders, and he's always making jokes about how large she is and stuff.
The one who got pregnant by the young man.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
Well, that is a little far-fetched.
Well, whatever.
The storyline.
Yeah, but he pokes fun at her weight, right? And I don't think that's funny.
You don't
approve
of that?
No. In every other way...
Well, it's illegal to be overweight in Britain now.
Is it?
Yeah, your doctor will label you obese at the even if you're a tiny bit over your target weight.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm obese.
They're going to make crisps illegal.
Yeah.
Fatty foods.
Fatty Arbuckle.
So maybe he's just, you know, taking a doctor's perspective, because he is a medical doctor.
He is a doctor, that's true. Man, you're amazing. Your brain. You can really think your way around a situation.
Around anything
I'm
you
being
say.
Sincere. It's impressive, because my brain is deteriorating at an alarming rate.
Blinder Data!
I've got to say, a couple of things, Adam, you've said in recent shows have made me feel distanced from you.
Oh, really?
Your love of I'm a Celebrity...
Yeah.
I find that very... You feel like a stranger to me.
But I used to feel the same way when you used to go on about Big Brother. I mean, I know you don't like it anymore, but
then you got into the Big Brother.
You used to watch the heck out of Big Brother,
and I was like,
what the hell is he on about?
Yeah. Well, it's been going on for a few years now, though.
What else have I said to alienate you?
There was something else you said. The fact that you didn't know that Guy Ritchie had made...
Yeah, yeah.
had made Sherlock Holmes.
It's very simple.
I mean, you're a family man, so yeah. You've got other concerns. But I sometimes worry that our shared pool of references is diminishing.
Well, no, because we've got about 20 years worth from when we were children that we're feeding off.
That's going to start dating us.
Yeah.
It's the beginning of the end.
Oh, don't say that. Come on, blander dick. Should we get to the podcast?
Yeah, let's get to the podcast. Yeah.
What are you saying now?
Just another thing.
Another depressing thing, is it?
It's not depressing, it's analytical.
Right.
I'm just looking after the central mechanism of the show.
Sure.
Trying to keep the key cogs oiled with pop cultural lubricants.
Okay.
I'm just saying you got to keep up with the hip grooves.
I see these flipping things eventually. I'm going to see the true. Miserable it's Guy true. Ritchie thing after a while, you know. Yeah. God help me.
I tell you what, I'll draw up a list.
Okay.
Of things that I feel like have come between us.
Dr. Culture. You can be my culture doctor.
Okay.
And you can write me a prescription for the stuff I should be checking out.
All right.
And you know that I will do it.
I'm already a doctor of sexiness.
Well, come on. Spread your legs. Here's the podcast.
This is a big British castle podcast with some talking from the Adam and Joe Show radiogram. You can listen to it while you're on your way to work. And when you get there, you can listen on the loo. How do you do?
So listen, folks, we're going to play the Retro Textonation jingle very shortly. But I want to talk to you, Joe, and apologize to you about getting so worked up about this whole jingle business last week. On the show, listeners, I was complaining, actually in a comedic way. It was supposed to be like deliberately over-the-top comedic whining.
Oh, yeah.
I was complaining about the fact that everyone loves Joe's Retro Textonation jingle, including my wife. And all I seem to get is abuse for using GarageBand loops for my jingles, right? I wasn't really that serious about it. I was having a little chickle chuckle, okay? And very kindly and very loyally, a lot of listeners responded throughout the week by email and stuff, but kind of went too far the other way. Like they were being really nice about my jingles, but then they were sort of laying into Joe a little bit. And I felt kind of bad and protective towards Joe because that was not my intention at all. So I'd like to read out a message from John in High Wycombe, which I think is quite even-handed and redresses the balance a little bit. Hi, Count Cornulies and Buckballs, he calls us. I just thought I'd drop you a line regarding all this jingle nonsense. Adam contributes a great deal to the show with his jingles, whilst Joe sits atop a lofty throne sneering at Bucky's efforts.
How is this redressing the balance?
Well, I think he's joking there, right? This is clearly becoming an issue for Adam. He's playing along with the fact that I was getting mock indignant.
So like you, he is also joking, even though he's offered us no indication of the fact. Yeah, no, I'm waiting.
However, it has to be said that the Retro Textonation jingle, in all its forms, is nothing short of spectacular, he says in capitals. Of all the jingles and songs, it is the one that persistently returns to my psyche, and at any moment, I could break into song without needing to think of the words. I'm a trash man myself. He doesn't like it in the bin.
Okay.
I wanted to send you this in the hope that, like a lucky shopper, I might be the thousandth emailer to praise Joe's wonderful song this week, and that this email might be the one to fully push Adam over the edge. Yours, hopefully, reaching...
Well, it's had the opposite effect. It's pushed you onto the edge.
Yeah, no, it's made me contrite and made me embarrassed that I was implying to the listeners that I genuinely resent your deserved success with the Retro Textonation jingle.
I mean, I don't mind at all, but I can't help feeling you're fishing for compliments with your emotional outlays.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah,
I was.
You're playing kind of games, aren't you?
I genuinely didn't mean to.
We always talk about that we've never read the games people play.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember?
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, if that was happening somewhere in my subconscious, then I genuinely apologize, Joe.
Yeah. That's all right.
I love your retro. I used to listen to Adam and Joe, but I listened to the podcast, not the live. Yeah.
Well, let's see. You can hear it for real now because it's Retro Textonation time.
Because I couldn't.
I like to listen to Adam and Joe, but I listened to the podcast, not the live show. I used to feel acute frustration because I couldn't join in with Textonation. But now my worries have disappeared. Instead of throwing the trash and forgotten about.
Love it.
Thanks, man.
Brilliant jingle.
And Retro Text the Nation this week is all about reasons you think you're psychic because of the fact that that was the subject last week.
Yeah, that's right.
This one is from Laura Beatty. This is a good one. Okay. Dearest Buckles and Cornballs, I'm pretty sure that I have the power to short-circuit machinery when scared.
Ooh.
The haunted house at Alton Towers broke down whilst I was on it. Samurai at Chessington broke down whilst I was on it. X No Way Out, comma Samurai. Are they the same ride? I think X No Way Out is a different ride, isn't it? Broke down while I was on it. Logger's Leap at Thorpe Park broke down whilst I was on them. And Space Mountain at Euro Disney broke down while I was on it.
Wow.
This was actually while I was actually on them, not just in the park. And on some occasions, I was left in the dark, dangling in the air for quite some time. One time, I got freaked out watching my little brother on a mousetrap ride, and that broke down too.
Whoa.
So either I have telekinetic powers or I'm really unlucky. Love, Laura Beatty.
I would say you've got telekinetic powers, Laura.
You know, X No Way Out broke down while I was on it as well.
Really?
And I think it might just be a feature of the ride. It sort of pretends to stop and break down and then goes backwards.
Aha. Uh-huh.
It's quite painful and uncomfortable and
yeah.
Abrupt ride.
Yes.
When we went on it. Do you remember us going on it about,
sure.
about 10 years ago or something?
I went on a roller coaster for the first time the other day.
It was an X-Files themed ride, wasn't it? That shows how old
yeah,
it is.
There you go.
X No Way Out.
Yeah, for the first time in quite a long time, I went on a roller coaster and was shocked by how violent it was. I was totally unprepared.
Oh, I love them.
I came off and I was all aches and pains. I was like, oh, dear, my back. Oh, I'm not going to do that again. I'm too old. Too old.
I like it. So that's pretty frightening stuff, isn't it?
That
I would
be spooky.
Disturbed if I was in a theme park with Laura Beatty. It reminds me of that film The Fury.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember there's this kind of an indoor film theme park?
Sure.
And there's some men on a wheelie wheel.
Yeah.
And it goes crazy and they get flung off. Do you remember?
It's horrific stuff.
It's wizard.
It's absolutely wizard.
Of course, it's fictional because it's in a film, and if that happened in reality, that would be frightful.
Best bit in The Fury is when she's hovering on the roof, or he's
hovering, and not on a roof. He's in a room, and
he's hovering on the ceiling,
hovering above the door.
That's
yeah.
right.
Spooky,
scary.
Good film. Have you got any retro textonations?
Yeah, I've got one that isn't that spooky, but I was impressed about who it was from. This is from a guy called Phil Thornerly. Do you know Phil?
Well, I know the one you're going to read.
Yeah, Phil Thornerly listens to this show. He co-wrote "Torn" by Natalie Imbruglia.
Wow.
He produced Pornography by The Cure, their best album, I think.
Oh, and this is the Thompson Twins guy.
Yeah. And
the guy that mixed.
He was in The Cure for a while, and he...
Would it have been Into the Gap he mixed? Or?
I think it... Or Quickstep
and Sidekick.
Judy Doo was the track that he talks about here. He was the recording engineer on that Thompson Twins record. Anyway, Phil says, and that is impressive. That is a roster of impressive credits, not least the Thompson Twins connection from Phil. And he writes in... and says, "Dear Adam and Joe, your theme about psychic moments reminded me of this story. Although it's not psychic, strictly speaking, it is spooky and cosmic and perhaps precognizant. I was working as a recording engineer on a Thompson Twins record, a production idea that was de rigueur at the time, after Talking Heads and David Byrne did it, on My Life in the Bush of Ghosts, involved recording what was coming out of a radio, sort of found music, random, arty, etc. We set up the radio and the microphone and hit record. The song that came out of the radio as the track rolled was performed by Judy Garland. Spookily, the track we were recording was called Judy Do about Judy Garland. Is this crap?" He says at the end of
no, it's not.
The message. No, not at all. Thanks, Phil, in Kilburn. And we're humbled and excited that you listened to the programme.
This is from Heidi Wart. "Once I was very drunk in a takeaway after a heavy night out. There was an idiot hole throwing his noodles at the wall.
That was me.
This outraged me in my drunken stupor, and I started to confront him, shouting, 'Would you do that in your own house?'
Nice.
Soon we were engaged in a slanging match. It was quickly getting out of control, so my friend dragged me outside, consoling me. 'Oh, he'll get what's coming to him,' I replied. 'I hope so.' Just then, the culprit ran out of the takeaway after me, only to be suddenly hit by a car."
What?
"I couldn't believe what I'd done. I was quite shaken. Luckily, he was fine and he walked away, but I will never use my dark talents again."
Who's
That's
that
pretty
from?
Good. Heidi Wart.
Heidi Wart. Don't mess with Heidi. She'll use her dark talents. Especially if you're throwing noodles against the wall, you deserve.
Why would you throw your noodles against a wall?
Just disgusted with the noodles.
What kind of attitude to life is that? go into a noodle shop, order some noodles, wait patiently for them to be freshly cooked.
Yeah.
They're handed to you over the counter. You simply pick them up and throw them against the wall
what
and
if
leave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, what if they're
That's
bad
like
noodles?
It's like a sort of art statement.
Exactly. Because some of them would stick to the wall
Maybe
as well.
Maybe he was a conceptual artist.
Could have been. Exactly.
Yeah.
He's a what?
You
young,
don't want to jump to conclusions. You know, things, actions like that aren't necessarily thuggish. It could have been Anish Kapoor. If throwing noodles against the wall with, what's his name, Alan Yentob, sitting cross-legged on the floor with his chin in his hand, thinking.
They do a piece in the culture
Did you see
show,
Alan Yentob doing his thing on Anish Kapoor?
No, I didn't, no.
I love on documentaries like that the way the presenter, like Alan
incorporates
Yentob,
themselves.
Well, the way they have to do shots of him looking at the work.
Right.
And the expression on Mr. Yentob's face as he looks at the work.
They show you how to respond.
Brilliant man, obviously, but it's hard to come out of those things with that much dignity.
Alan Tentyob.
Yo, what's going on? What's the scene? Who the heck are these crazy guys? Well, one's called Adam and the other's called Joe, and you're listening to their podcast. Oh!
So, Joe, you're a big I'm a Celebrity Get Me Out of Here fan.
No, I'm not.
You've been glued to it this week?
Nope.
Right? Well, me and my wife have been glued to the I'm a Celebrity Get Me Out of Here.
Right.
We absolutely unreservedly love that show. Every year I have the same tedious fantasy about being invited to appear on it and discuss it in lengthy detail with my wife, the actual practicalities of flying out to Australia, whether she would come out, how exciting it would be to be in the hotel.
Really?
Yeah. If I was voted out fairly quickly, I'd probably be voted out like within the first few vote-offs. I wouldn't mind because I'd get more time in the hotel. All this kind of stuff we talk about. And then we talk about like, probably I'm not going to get invited to be on the show because I'm not sufficiently famous. Also, they don't generally invite kind of ludicrous comedian type people on there because they've learned that they don't really work so well. The dynamic is thrown off by those kind of people because they're too self-aware. You know, they need more ridiculous type people on there. We have all these discussions every night. It's like news night round at our house in front of I'm a Celebrity. Get me out of here. And at the moment, we're going through the difficult first week where you're getting used to the celebrities that are in there. And there's always a feeling of disappointment, like chemistry's not as good as in previous years. You know, you haven't got the really sparky people to set things off. Colin and Justin, I like Colin and Justin. You know, the thing is that you suddenly find yourself having opinions and relationships with all these people who were in your periphery before.
Yeah.
But suddenly you're like, oh, Colin and Justin. Now I understand. Like, I'd never seen a show with them in it before. You know, I knew of them. But now I know about them. I like Colin and Justin.
Mm.
Yeah. Do you know Colin and Justin?
Oh, yeah, sure. I know Colin and Justin.
Do you like them?
Yeah.
I like them.
As people.
Yeah, like green eggs and ham. Mm. Sam, I am. I do. I like Colin
That's
and
good.
Justin.
That's good. Good. It's good to like things.
Yeah. He's an intelligent guy, Justin. And
hey, what about Colin, though? Are you saying he's...
Well, I'm sort
bigger?
Of amused by the way their relationship is so clearly delineated, you know what I mean? Like, which one is the dominant partner in that relationship? I think it's the first time they've had a couple in the jungle in that
which
way.
Which one is the dominant one in your relationship?
I don't want to go into that on the radio. It'll cause all kinds of problems. Gino DeCampo, did you know him?
Nope.
Never aware of Gino. He's some chef, I think. Maybe on Can't Cook, Won't Cook or one of those Ready, Steady, Cook. I don't know. Some cook show. And he's a kind of a crazy Italian man, you know. And he talks like this. Literally like this. And he says, Mamma Mia! And things like that. It's great, Joe. You should see the program.
It sounds terrific.
Gino DeCampo.
Yeah, good. He's a big comedy Italian
man. He's a funny
man.
Italian man.
Yeah.
I like. He's
like
nice guy.
Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, exactly. Like Super Mario Brothers. Mamma Mia.
Mamma Mia.
Oh, Mamma Mia, Joe. I can't believe this.
That's he sounds like a larger-than-life character.
He's a larger-than-life character. You're right. You like us a pasta.
He's very enthusiastic. Speaking of broad Italian caricatures, I watched a very serious art film this week called The Wages of Fear, right?
He's in that film!
Well, there's a character called... it was very intense. It's got Yves Montand. It's about people transporting nitroglycerin. It's very famous.
The nitroglycerin?
Yes, there's a character in it called Luigi.
Ba-ba-boom, bang.
Yes, who is a big Italian man. And he's dressed exactly like Luigi from Super Mario Brothers with a little cap, a little bandana around his neck, an open shirt and a hairy chest.
Yes.
He's short and fat. And his arms are sticking out to the side all of the time. Bing! A mushroom!
Ba-ba-boom!
Ba-ba-boom! Yeah, I couldn't concentrate on the master paucity of it.
Yeah.
Because I was hearing little one-up noises all
Sometimes,
the time.
Italians do, you get a lot of Italians who do conform to that stereotype in a very pleasing way. Is that a problem statement?
I don't know. It's a fun statement.
I like it. Like I like it when I meet French people who are exactly like a grotesque caricature of a French person. Oh, you like Aziz? Oh, come in. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
And they exist, these people.
Yeah.
I love that. Joe Bugner, he's in there in the jungle. Do you remember Joe Bugner?
Is he a boxing man?
Yeah, he's a big boxing man. And he's a bit South African, like not too extremely South African, but he's a bit South African. He's very funny because he talks about, he knows a lot about the jungle, and he talks about you got to watch out for the ticks, because the ticks are going to get up in your scalp there, and they're going to burrow right into your brains, and they will kill you before you know what's even happening. And all the rest of the campers are all sat around looking ashen-faced and frightened with his stories of imminent death about the ticks and the spiders and all the things you got to watch out for in the jungle. But the big, obviously, headline-grabbing person in the jungle is Katie Price, a.k.a. Jordan, right?
Right.
Where do you stand on Jordan? Literally, a literal answer. Which part of her body?
No. Boobs.
Of course you do. Yeah. That's anyway. But are you pro-Price or anti-Price? Any opinion whatsoever? Not really.
Sort of blanking.
Blanking
her?
Price.
Yeah.
Did you ever watch her reality show with Pondre?
No.
Never?
Oh, yeah, no, of course I did.
Yeah.
I side with Pondre, though, don't I?
Do you?
Yeah, I'm on Pondre's side.
Because you think she's too abrasive, too brash, that kind of thing?
You're looking at me with your Louis Theroux face. As
I'm
if this is
you,
a really serious...
It is a serious question.
It's so
you
clear,
don't like it when
so
we discuss hot topic
so
issues.
So clear you're going to flip this round.
No, I'm not flipping it round.
Because obviously she's demonstrated how sensitive and lovely she is now, right?
Yes.
Yes. Right.
I'm not flipping it round. I'm just saying, maybe it's my natural desire to side with the underdog, but I feel sorry for the girl. Okay? And I like her. There's something I like about her, and I can't tell what. Maybe she reminds me of an old girlfriend or something.
Listen, surely they should fly you out for the ITV2 programme.
That's what I'm hoping.
I mean, I agree you might not be famous enough, a public figure, to go on the actual programme.
Yeah.
But you could be with that parade of people on the ITV2 programme.
Desperate Losers, is that what you were thinking?
No. Commentators.
Yeah, yeah.
They'd put you up in the hotel for that. Come on.
I wish they would. Honestly, they've put a lot of other Desperate Losers up in that hotel. Surely I could fit in there too. But I am obsessed by Katie Price a little bit, right? I like the fact that when she's in the jungle, she doesn't wear so much makeup. She looks very beautiful, I think.
Oh, God.
And there's something nice and vulnerable about
her.
And I feel sorry for her. It's like, I mean, I know, yes, obviously, she courts publicity and she's sort of obsessed by it and she's insane in many ways. But I do believe there's a little scared girl underneath trying to get out. And I want to help her. Do you understand? Also, she's, you know, il y a du monde au balcon.
Yeah, that's true.
You know
Listen,
what I'm saying?
There are some magazines I could recommend to you that you might like reading.
I've got a song, though, that I want to play for you. I was moved to create a song for Katie Price.
Right.
And you remember last week I was getting you to sing along with that hymn?
Yeah.
This, my singing on this is a little bit like that because I got this jingle. This is a prepackaged jingle that I'm singing over. And I couldn't, I was sort of making up the tune as I went along. But anyway, here's my song for Katie Price. It can't be easy to go back to the jungle without Pondre close at hand, singing Insania, trying to unlock your celebrity chest, and instead you've got the battle axe from How Clean Is Your House, putting you down for playing the same game they're all playing, but getting paid much, much more. Katie Price, take my advice, get away from the flipping lot. They've only got your breast interests at heart, like you're some kind of tart. Katie Price, it can't be nice getting cockroaches in your bra, while Ant and Dec go ha ha. Oh dear, Katie, are you all right? You were in trouble in the water there. Jordan, let her go. Don't you know that you're smothering a sweet girl called Kate, who
doesn't have your tough exterior. Katie,
have you worked out the price of fame? Maybe it's too high a price to pay. How I wish that you'd get back with Pondre.
Song for Katie Price there.
Very profoundly moving.
Thank you very much. I'm hoping maybe she'll hear it and I can get together with her.
Well, clearly. Listen, man, why don't you just go there?
What, fly myself to Australia?
Yes.
It's too expensive.
You could go economy. One of those student flights that stops at 10 places.
No.
They're cheaper than you. Listen, I'll pay.
All right.
But I think you should go there and really try and get in there.
Yeah.
Force yourself upon them.
It's my dream.
Well, it can come true.
Text the nation. Text, text, text. Text the nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
We're going to talk about I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here again, very briefly, just to kick off this Text the Nation, right? Put it in some kind of context. Kim Woodburn, do you know who she is, Joe?
Nope.
She's the battle axe from How Clean Is Your House that I
right.
referred to in the Katie
oh,
Price
Oh, right, Kim
song
and Aggie, there. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There you go, Kim and Aggie. You see, all these people, again, I'm aware of their existence, but suddenly I understand what the deal is, having seen them in the jungle. Anyway, she's a total nightmare, as far as I can tell. Overbearing and just larger than life in every tedious way possible. And one of her things is being brutally honest with people. She's one of these people who says, I say what's on my mind. I can't help it. I can't help it, love. I absolutely have to say what's on my mind. I have to be honest. And people like that just make me want to end it all. Because, you know, it's like you don't have to say what's on your mind. You don't have to be brutally honest. That was one of the weird things about Ricky Gervais's film, The Invention of Lying, which I haven't seen, incidentally. So
good, good.
I don't know if I can't comment
too
much.
You're talking from an ill-informed
exactly.
viewpoint.
Exactly,
yeah.
That's right.
Go,
yeah.
shoot.
Absolutely ill-informed.
It's my favourite viewpoint.
But the weird thing, but I've seen the trailer. Right?
Oh, that's good. That's good to see. Yeah.
So the problem, I think, having not seen the film, with the film, is that, you know, his idea is that if you live in a world where there's no lying, then that means that everyone is immediately brutally honest and says, like, the worst thing that's on their mind. Sure, that's not true. That's not what lying is about. Lying is about saving people's feelings a lot of the time, you know.
That would be the invention of rudeness or
yeah.
the invention of politeness. What? What would it be? But it's something else, isn't it?
Yeah, just because you can't lie doesn't mean to say you're going to go around telling everyone they stink. You know what I mean? Anyway, so Kim Woodburn, right, goes up to Justin from Colin and Justin. Love them both. And she, totally unprovoked, for no reason at all, goes up to him and points at the several moles that he has on his handsome face and says, "You should get rid of those, darling. You should get them lasered off. Why have you got them on your handsome face there? You'd be much more handsome if you got rid of those moles." And he was totally shocked by this, right? And totally taken aback. He didn't really know how to respond. He was sort of floored for a few minutes. And then after a while, he got his bearings and sort of said, "That's kind of a rude thing to say. Why would you say that?" She's like, "Well, I'm just being honest. I've got to say what's on my mind, dear. I have to be honest. You should get those lasers off. You know, you've got a handsome face. And those moles are spoiling them." This, incidentally, coming from a woman who is not exactly an oil painting herself, right? But it seems such a weird thing to do, to go
what
up.
Would she get lasered off?
Her face?
The whole face. That's what he should have come back with.
Exactly. Well, why not laser your whole face off?
You should get lasered off entirely.
Exactly.
She'd just be blasted by a laser.
If I had my laser with me, then I would laser you into 1,000 tiny pieces.
Little powdery puff of flesh and fabric. And then emptiness.
With my laser.
Like in Steven Spielberg's War of the Worlds.
Right.
A bloodless explosion.
Yeah.
A human pop.
That's right. That is what I'm holding out for. I'm hoping that's going to be in the last week if I'm a Celebrity. That's going to be one of the Bush Tucker trials.
That would be good if they had a satellite. You see, this is, I'd watch, I'd be interested if they had a laser-armed satellite above the camp. And they could just take them out very suddenly.
Laser Kim Woodburn. Anyway, so it very much reminded me that that kind of person exists in the world, you know, the kind of person that absolutely feels they have to say what's on their mind, regardless of other people's feelings, and they don't really think it through. But then everyone does that themselves every now and again. You say things, you are perhaps too honest, or you feel compelled to be honest with a person, and then regret it afterwards.
there was a guy at school, and this is how much trouble I'm having summoning up some kind of anecdote along these lines. But there was a guy at school who used to take great pleasure in pointing out zits.
I remember.
Do you remember?
Yeah.
Everyone else would very politely pretend that the thick layer of of medicated makeup,
witch hazel,
witch hazel and weird peroxide product on your face was invisible.
Yeah.
But this one guy would go around and go, "God, look at that strawberry."
Yes, exactly.
You running a pick-your-own thing?
Yeah.
You'd say stuff like that.
Make you feel really self-conscious and stuff. It's bizarre. But then also I'm thinking about incidents when you're perhaps with your lady partner and having a conversation about who you fancy on TV or whatever, or, you know, those kind of conversations. In a fictional world, who would you be allowed to have an affair with if you met them? You know what I mean? Do you ever have those conversations?
Sure, sometimes.
And you feel as if you're on an equal intellectual footing with your girlfriend, stroke, lady, partner, man, partner, whatever it happens to be. But, and so you're honest with them, right? You're just having a sort of fun discussion. Suddenly, they take offense. They get really upset. And the whole discussion is like, whoa, where's this gone? You know, and suddenly the lady partner's crying because you have expressed an interest in snogging
Cheryl Cole.
So how would you
encapsulate this best for the listeners?
Times when you have regretted being honest with someone or got into trouble.
Or could it be the other way around? Someone who's been too brutally honest with you?
Yeah, it goes both ways.
It's going to take a certain bravery on the listener's part to admit to some of these things, perhaps.
Our listeners can do it.
They're bold, they're brave.
Very brave.
I'm a funny person. I often make up jokes. My jokes are more amusing than those of other folks. When you hear my joke, I think you'll find that you agree. Come on, you're all invited to a made-up joke party.
We do get a huge amount of these through. I mean, it is ridiculous.
How is your sort of vetting going? Are you vetting, Adam? Are you Google searching the jokes that you read out?
I'm trying to be a bit more stringent because in the past I've been too easily impressed by puns and one-liners and stuff. So I'm trying to avoid those a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, because I accept the fact that I've been too credulous and too willing to believe that there are made-up jokes. In the end, it turns out generally that Tim Vine has done them at some point. How
Vinyl
about you?
Vinyl car. Well, I'm just doing a little bit of last-minute vetting now. And
are you?
I think I've cleared my first joke.
Okay, okay.
From Alan and Joe Jenkins. How do you make a questionnaire laugh?
I don't know.
You tickle its boxes. You tick all its boxes.
Hey!
I just Google searched, you tickle its boxes, nothing coming up. There's nothing but tickle me Elmo links coming up.
Right.
So that's good, isn't it? Alan
that
and Joe
good.
Jenkins, that's officially an authored joke.
Well,
do you know what you should be able to do?
No.
You should be able to register jokes with the PRS, the Performing Rights Society. People in the business of music will know that if you're a musician and you have a hit record, they've really got the profit distribution system really nailed, better than any other industry. So if you could apply that structure to joke authorship, don't you think? I mean, Alan and Joe Jenkins, they would be making some coin every time that joke was cracked.
Yeah. But really,
difficult to monitor and register it.
You want to monetize wordplay.
Man, once Wi-Fi's installed in the brain, that which is within the next 2 weeks, apparently,
hooray,
then that kind of thing will be feasible.
No, in my luck, it'll be rubbish Wi-Fi. In my brain.
Have you got any jokes?
Sure I do. I got loads. Here's one from Toby McCarthy.
Okay, as you said, I'm going to Google some of the key
Actually,
terms.
This does need Googling because after my lengthy speech about avoiding simple wordplay, this is classic and maybe semi-obvious wordplay, but I like it.
Shoot.
Hey there, Buckles and Cornballs. Where do above-average electricians do their shopping? Sparks and Mensa. Hey!
That's good.
He says, a pleasure. Give Boggins a kick from me. That's from Tom McCarthy.
Google hit number two. Sparks and Mensa is a recycled line about M&S from the 70s. Not only is it a real groaner, ..
What?
Google hit number two.
Okay, well, what about this? All right, Google this then.
Well, hang on, it's my turn.
Johnny Googles.
It's my turn.
All right, you do one.
I'm going to do one that doesn't get any Google response. What's round and sounds like a trumpet?
Don't know.
A crumpet. Come on.
Google that one!
The best response I've had to this joke was a sympathetic half-grin from my girlfriend. Thanks, by Kevin Shaw.
Yeah. Well, you got another sympathetic half-grin from me, mate. Right? Is that a bit aggressive? Hey, what are you Googling there?
What's round and sounds like a trumpet?
Anything?
No, nothing. Nothing.
So
nothing.
Cornish scores 2-0.
2-0. 2-0. Shut up, shut up. 2-0, 2-0. Boom, boom, fight.
Boom, football fight. Talk. Very nice. All right, Danny Dyer. Here's one from Sam Bowman. Did you hear about how Velma from Scooby-Doo's teaching evaluation exam went?
I can't believe you chose this one.
What? This is a good one.
Go on.
Yeah, she would have gotten an A with it if it weren't for those pesky kids. Velma from Scooby-Doo's teaching evaluation exam.
And she would have...
She would have gotten an A with it.
Well, now, hang on, I'm getting some responses
if
off
it
this.
Weren't for those pesky kids. I liked it, Sam Bowman.
Needs further investigation.
That
Lucy?
Chuckle.
Lucy, if you could investigate that
Lucy.
One further,
that's
please.
Totally legit.
You could run that through Google. Thank you very much.
Have you got another one then?
I think you've got that one. Sure, I've got another one.
Come on then.
Why is it easy to buy clothes that fit Derek Acora?
I don't know.
Because he's a medium. James Pestel in Wind... Oh, I'm going to make this mistake again. Wymondham.
Wyndham.
Wyndham, yeah.
That's good. Let's stop Googling them. It just brings the whole thing down.
Yeah?
Yeah. Well, it brings me down anyway. Here's one from Martha, which I really do not believe needs Googling. She says, this was made up by my co-worker, Mike. The farmyard animals have entered a competition organized by the farmer and his wife. A marquee kitted out with decks, lights, and a glitter ball is the prize, which goes to the animal who presents the best Shakespearean
this
passage.
This is good.
The sheep does Macbeth, the horse does Hamlet, and the cow does Richard III. The farmer and his wife have a tough job choosing a winner, but finally they announce, "Cow is the winner of our disco tent."
Nice. Brilliantly designed. What a piece of verbal architecture that is.
Yeah, she says, "Please kill Boggins." Cow is the winner of our disco tent. Very nice, Martha. I like that one a lot. You got another one there?
I'm reading through them and I don't know. Maybe I was a little bit tooty when I picked them because they don't seem so funny now.
Come on. This is a good one. Kevin Corr sent this in. Have you heard about the new BBC sitcom in which a young man advises his stepmother about the British weather? It's called It Ain't Hot, Half Mum.
Nice. He's a reporter on the Liverpool Echo.
Is he?
Kevin Corr, yeah.
Well, quite rightly. He's a genius.
Okay, I've got one. This is from Ivor Hatton. Dear Adam and Joe, what does any aspiring person working in journalism or the arts want to get in their Christmas cracker?
Oh, this is a good one.
A Pulitzer Prize.
Pulitzer
Come on,
Surprise.
A Pulitzer Prize.
Woo-hoo-hoo! That's Brills.
Brill skills.
Here's a very simple one, which may well have been made before, but it made me chuckle. This is from Matt in North London. What do you call a racist wizard?
Oh, Adam. I don't know. I'm worried. Or I'm already very worried.
Nick Gryffindor.
Oh, nice. Good. Good. Now, that's quite probably funny. Quite contempo,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Harry Potter, a little bit.
He's
Harry
only
Potter.
Entered the public realm.
Yeah, yeah.
Like an old stinky waft
like
in the last
waft.
Month or so.
Sure.
Text the nation. Text, text, text. Text the nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
What is it all about?
What is it all about?
This week.
Yeah, what is it about? It's like a magazine, right? And they collect all the articles from different papers, right? And they put it in the mag. So you got, it's like an overview of all the different media. That's basically what this week's about.
Thanks. This week's Text the Nation, though, is all about being brutally honest and regretting it.
Yeah.
Here are some ones what we have got in. This is from Jess. My ex-boyfriend and I were having the who would you sleep with conversation. We should... describe this a bit. People know what that is, don't they? Maybe we shouldn't go into it in any
well,
detail.
It's
a family
with,
program.
It's
but
with,
were you to have a physical liaison with someone outside of wedlock?
It's something that long-term partners yeah. discuss, isn't
who you
it?
You would get a kind of a free ticket for.
Yeah, yeah.
So my ex-boyfriend and I were having that conversation. I said George Clooney, obviously.
Yeah.
And he immediately replied, Hannah from work.
That's not allowed.
Awkward silence ensued.
It's got to be...
She does sound attractive, though, doesn't she?
Hannah from work?
Yeah.
Sure, she is.
Something just about those three words.
Definitely.
I mean...
Look at Hannah's hair. It's so clean.
Hannah, she's lovely.
Who's your one, incidentally?
What do you mean?
Your one that you're allowed to
we
have.
We don't really have that conversation.
Do you not?
No, I don't think we've ever had that conversation.
Mm. Well, you're not like a person from Friends, then.
No, I'm not. That's a shame. I'm lacking in dimensionality.
Thought all people were like people from Friends, having all the same...
Or do all couples have to have that conversation?
Yes, you've got to conform to the thing. You've got to have the couple conversation that they have
rebellious.
In Friends and stuff.
Here's one from Tim in Dorset. An unnamed woman I was at school with had, let's just say, an issue with a 5 o'clock shadow. Whilst out drinking, I decided to say, why don't you just shave it off?
What?
To say she was upset is an understatement. I am an idiot forever for that.
Who's that from?
Tim in Dorset. He's scarred himself and her forever. I mean, no one's come out on top with that exchange.
But what was he thinking, though?
He was thinking, why doesn't she just shave it off?
So was he trying, in his mind, he was sort of offering some practical advice?
Yeah.
Like, hey, you're
but
a woman.
That's patronising
like,
in and
most
of
women
itself.
Don't like having beards. Why don't you shave it off? He didn't think it through. Like, why didn't he go the extra step and think about how she would feel?
I mean, she wouldn't want to shave it off anyway, because that just makes it stubbly.
Exactly.
Wax it off. Or one of those burning chemicals.
Laser.
Do you like
laser.
The way I'm sitting?
Sure I do. You've got your legs crossed and you're like sat sideways to yeah. the desk there.
Facing Adam.
It's very
like
nice.
Some sort of idiot on some kind of Channel 5 news programme.
Like an uncle.
Yep. next, then. I'm not going to sit like that anymore.
Tom in Dorset, what were you thinking, though? My goodness. Incidentally, I like ladies. I mentioned this before. I like ladies with a bit of facial hair.
You like men with a bit of facial hair as well.
I like anyone with a bit of facial hair.
You just like hair.
I like a downy moustache on a girl. I really do.
Do you go through barber's bins? And then take bags of it home.
I have done.
And store them in a cupboard.
I'll tell you one thing. I tell you one thing I really did do, which my wife discovered the other day and fur-lipped out. The first time I grew my beard in 2005, it was really massive and bushy. I went to Edinburgh and I was doing this show. So I had a crazy pirate beard. And then when I came back and I trimmed it, I didn't shave the whole thing off, but I trimmed it massively. And there was
kept the bits?
Sure I did.
In a little bag?
In a little box.
You might have told us this story before.
Possibly.
And then your wife came across the hairy box.
Yeah, she flipped.
What did she think it was?
She didn't know what it was.
She probably thought it was
hair.
What
the hell is this? And she couldn't figure out what it was. She didn't know what part of the body it had come from.
Well, obviously not. You could have been engaged in some Johnny Knoxville style puby beard stunt.
Right. And she was saying, why are you? And when I explained, I was like, she's like, why have you kept this? I couldn't give a good answer to that question.
How would you pronounce the name G-I-L-L?
Gill.
From Essex. Could be Jill.
It's Gill.
Gill. During my career as a school teacher, I was on playground duty when a little girl came up to me and said so sweetly, Miss, your bottom looks just like a horse's.
Oh, wait, Miss, it is Jill then.
Then skipped off happily. Oh, the honesty of children.
Your
That's
bottom,
quite brutal, isn't
your
it?
Bottom
I mean,
looks
kids
like a horse's.
Say a lot of phrases. Have your kids said really brusque things to you?
Kids say the funniest things. No, I was talking the other day about how sophisticated, particularly my eldest son, is with his sense of empathy.
Right.
So he doesn't say hurtful things. He's very considered. It's very touching the way he thinks about people's feelings. He doesn't do that.
Good for him.
This podcast comes from a corner of the BBC that you can listen to if you have got a DAB. It is called Six Music,
the secret station.
Now, listen, folks, we're going to talk about Boggins here right now. And don't worry, he's nowhere near the studio, right? We've made sure that he was safely in his kennel before we came in this morning. So if you've got a problem with the way he sounds, don't worry about it. He's not going to be in here. But we have to deal with the avalanche of correspondence that we've received about our little doggy friend, Chum. And Joe was even at the beginning of the show saying, you know,
I was.
Perhaps we shouldn't even talk about him. Perhaps we shouldn't even mention him because it has polarized the listeners to such a degree that...
I was berating you for making an executive decision and announcing on our blog that we would continue to cover Bloggins. Bloggins.
Well, I just said that, you know, we are going to respond to the messages that people are sending in, right? Because we're getting a lot of messages about it.
Mm.
So why would we ignore all the strong feelings of our listeners about the little stinky man dog? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do know what
For example,
you're saying.
Here is a letter. This is the kind of letter that basically has unsettled, particularly you, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's unsettled both of us a little bit. This is from Corinne Comartin, or Comartin. I don't know how you pronounce that. She's from the Department of International Development at the University of Oxford. Clearly an intelligent, professional woman. And this message seems absolutely sincere. She says, whenever Boggins is around, my hands automatically reach for the stop play button. So I guess she's listening on the iPlayer or whatever. Not sure why, but I can't stand him and he's been ruining my fun. It would really help if you had a warning that says, warning, this show features Boggins. Then I would know that I can give the whole show a miss rather than stop halfway through, completely exasperated and frustrated. I've been a long-standing fan, but this feels like the end of a beautiful affair. And just because of a stupid dog, how could you?
Corinne Comartin. So the question is, and we've been discussing this in between songs, like, what's the deal? Like, to deconstruct this for, in a very literal way, is she being absolutely serious there? Or is she joking a little bit? Is she getting into the spirit of being scandalized by Boggins and kind of joking about how much she hates him and taking it to an extreme? Or what? Because we don't want to genuinely shed listeners who are... But then if she was that scandalized by it, she'd be a nutcase, though, wouldn't she? It's not like Boggins is in every link.
Yeah, well, there's an ontological issue at the center of that question that's also at the center of the whole Boggins debate,
What's
right?
What's ontological?
It's from the Greek... I've got it up on the internet here just to make, because I knew you'd ask me this.
Yeah.
It's from the Greek. I can't tell you what Greek it is, but it's about the nature of being, existence, or reality.
Ah, right.
So, you know, is she being truthful or is she sort of role playing?
Yeah.
Is Boggins, I mean, Boggins is a fictional dog. We've made that clear.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's not real. And were we to kill him, that would not be real. And you see there's an ontological question at the core of both questions.
It's so weird because there's such a sophisticated level of role-playing and fantasy involved with Boggins. Mm. And with the interaction that we're getting from listeners as well, some people seemingly very sincere about wanting to kill him, other people seemingly very sincere about loving him and writing songs for him and stuff like that. It's very hard to pick apart the fantasy and the reality now. They've become enmeshed in a troubling way. And what, I mean, it freaks me out that we actually would lose a lot of listeners just because of this dog.
Well, I think there's two things here. Some people don't like the sound physically. They find it irritating. Other people think to have a sort of fictional dog on a Saturday morning radio show is maybe a slightly sort of cheesy and tired, predictable thing to happen, because there have been many fictional dogs in radio history,
many.
Haven't there?
I can think of one.
Well, there's been one. I bet you there's more than one. I bet you people could come up with other DJ dogs.
Yeah, but they haven't been as sweet as Boggins.
No, or as stinky.
Or as smelly.
Boggins has his own skill set.
But anyway, yes. So people might think that it's a silly Saturday morning kids show type thing to do, right?
Mm.
So, I don't think that's a problem. B, it doesn't dominate the entire show, so if you had a problem with it, just, you know, deal with it.
Yeah.
Like, it's
and
not
C,
like...
it's not as if this fictional dog is fictional.
Right.
Is it?
Oh, don't get into that. For example, here's a message from Beth Jackson. She's aged 10. Dear Adam and Joe, me and my dad were listening to your show the other day, and you said you were going to put Boggins down. And please don't, because
please
I love
don't.
Him, and even though he eats poo and stuff, he could stay with me. That's from Beth Jackson, age 10. She says, P.S. My dad loves your show and he would love it if you read this out for me. Three kisses there. Thank you, Beth. And that's sweet. She's listening with her dad. And are you worried that it's just going to become a kids show?
Well, I think younger listeners like Boggins more than older listeners.
Right.
Older listeners are cruel and cynical and want to see the fictional dog slaughtered.
I'm not sure.
Younger listeners are full of joie de vivre and optimism. And they want to see the dog thrive and live and cleaned up. Medically and, dealt with.
Yeah. And then here's a message from Anna. And she says, and this is more about the kind of bonding effect of Boggins. Hello, Adam. I just moved to Brighton with my bloke Tom, and he introduced me to your great show. Being a new fan, I was curious if anyone else was listening in my office, which is one of those massive open plan floors with everyone huddled around their own piece of grey carpet space. Anyway, so I said to my colleague, I thought quite quietly, what do you think of Boggins? To test him out. And suddenly, 60 people across the office started shouting, love him! And no, Boggins needs to die! It lasted an hour.
Do you believe that?
My boss took me away for a quiet word about disrupting the working day. Why would she make that up?
I don't know. That just seems too good to be true. I tell you what would really convince is if people took their little, you know, mobile phone audio note recorders into an office and shouted something about Boggins.
Right.
Then we could get a genuine response. Right. Do you know what I mean?
So what would conclude the Boggins issue? Like if someone was to say, get rid of the dog or carry on chatting about the dog.
Well, look, it's not up to us. The dog comes in here when the door is opened. We have to deal with it. I mean, it's not really our dog. So if we were to put him down, then we might get into trouble, for instance. I think it's beyond our control.
But if there was one person that said, you know, you should get rid of him, who would that be and that you would listen to?
James, the producer, I think.
Right.
I think James has the ultimate decision on Boggins.
What about Gillian Reynolds?
Gillian Reynolds?
Yeah, the critic.
The radio critic of The Telegraph?
Yeah.
Do you think she has the authority? She has probably a historical overview, a broader perspective of radio and its various tropes and things that work and don't.
I always remember her saying in a very nice review...
She's very supportive of us as well.
She said, I started listening to Adam and Joe and I don't plan to stop. She said that about a year ago. But I wonder if Boggins made her stop.
Oh, we should find out. Maybe we should try and get in touch with her.
Yeah, that's what worries me. Mm. So there you go. And, you'll notice that there was no little dog. Why are you laughing?
It's the way you said, so there you go. As if you just finished some sort of report from a front line.
It is! It's important political debate. That's what this show's all about.
Ouch! Podcast. Crazy, sexy fun. Coming out of my computer down my headphones. Too many ears. Two guys from England just talking about things. Oh my gosh, what's the point of all this stuff? I don't know.
I've got this note on my script, my list of things to talk about Lilo games.
Uh-huh.
I really want to chat about it, but it's winter now.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't seem appropriate, but it's appropriate just to remember the summer.
You even wanted to do it as a textination, didn't you?
I did.
Let's do Lilo games!
I love Lilo games. I want to talk about it.
What about Lilo and Stitch?
I don't like that so much. Mm. Do you think it could be a nice thing to talk about because it's obviously quite wintry now.
What about people who hate Lilos and might switch off if we start talking about Lilos?
I don't think Lilos divide people like Boggos do.
Well, yeah.
Boggos the Doggos.
Dear Adam and Joe, I've been a long-standing fan, but when you started talking about Lilos, that was really the last straw. I had to smash my radio against my husband's face.
What's your favourite Lilo game? In a swimming pool.
Oh,
do you do the one where you try and build a bridge across the swimming pool with Lilos?
And then try and run across it.
It can be very dangerous because if the pool's too narrow and you slip, you could hit your head.
Smash!
You have to be very careful. And when you land on the first Lilo, you don't know which way you're going to fall.
Sure it is.
So there's a risk you could fall backwards and hit your head. So do be very careful.
Classic Lilo fun.
You also have to have friends in the pool holding the Lilos together so they don't drift apart before you make the run.
You also have to apply for a Lilo license.
You have to have a Lilo
license. Before you stop playing.
Do you like that game?
Sure, everyone loves that game.
Do you like the game where you pile lots of Lilos up and try and stand on top of them?
That's a good game.
Do you ever try and stand up on one Lilo?
Yeah.
See how long you can stand up
for? Sure, I do.
It's impossible. No one can do it.
I can.
Do you ever try and push the Lilo under the water and make it...
Are we talking about single Lilo here? Double Lilo?
Well, I try and buy as many cheap Lilos as I can for a holiday. Yeah, yeah. I mean, they puncture easily, but they're cheap.
Push it under the water and what?
It's good to have quantity. Push it under the water and what? Do you ever try and push it right under the water so it sits on the bottom of the pool?
We're still talking about Lilos here.
Yes. Nice.
Yeah.
Yes. What?
I'm thinking about something else. Yeah.
You do?
I do.
You see, so that's the end of the Lilo conversation.
That's good, man. There's loads.
Do you ever race them?
That's my favourite game.
You lie on them on your belly and then do the forward crawl, the front crawl.
I sit in the middle so that both ends go up like the
front. Oh, you're one of those, are you?
Sure, sure.
I see.
And so it's like you're in a little floaty car.
Yes, so the front and back go up.
Paddle yourself along with both
hands. But then you can't see, it's like a car if the bonnet's flipped up. You can't see where you're going.
You position yourself so the bonnet is not obscuring your vision.
You less streamlined. You see, I would be beating you on my lying flat on my Lilo.
Yeah.
I'm terribly aerodynamic.
Are you really?
I'm like a really long plank.
Oh, if you're lying down, that's a totally different thing.
Well, it's a Lilo, not a sit-lo.
Oh, dear. Got so angry. You really hurt me. You really hurt my feelings.
Good.
Shall we have a bit of music and then come back with Text the Nation?
I haven't finished talking about Lilos.
Jeez. Oh,
now I've finished.
That's the air coming out of Joe's conversation. Ha ha ha! I win!
This is a chap called Peter. I'm going to keep his surname secret just in case we are exposing, a vulnerable part of his existence here. He says, a very famous American musician friend of mine, a very famous American musician friend of his, wow, a few years back, asked what I thought of his new record and that he'd respect my honest opinion, as always. I told him that instead of making a double album, maybe he should have made it a single record with just the good songs on it. I told him that to me, I thought a lot of the songs were filler and not in any way vital. He thanked me for my honesty. We hung out for the rest of the night. Then later that week, I saw him interviewed on TV. And when he was asked about the new record, he rather dejectedly said, well, I was really proud of it, but apparently people think we should have just made it a single album and dropped the rest, so I don't know.
Who could it be?
He looked a bit gutted. I felt really bad about it,
yeah.
but have never brought it up again with him.
Who's a big double album meister? Could be Axl Rose, could be Prince, the Purple Ponce. But I can't see Prince being too hurt by that kind of, or seeking counsel in that way anyway. But that's usually good advice. I mean, there are so many times when that would have been brilliant advice for someone. Just chop it down, get rid of the filler, just keep the killer.
Our general stance is to lie when a friend asks yeah. you whether you think anything's good or not. You, I mean, just tell them it's really good.
Don't you think, like, if you have a friendly relationship with someone, if they're asking you on a friendly basis, what did you think of this or that I just done? You are supportive. That's my default position. Yeah. I don't see any point, unless you're being paid for your professional opinion, like if you're a producer or something.
I tell you a good approach, just be balanced.
Yeah.
So before you say the bad things, think of two good things.
Well, exactly. Focus on the good stuff.
Yeah.
But then sometimes it's too obvious that that's what's happening. You know?
Peter says, now when any bands ask me what I think, and I've got criticism in mind, I deliver the stock answer, quote, I can see what you're doing with it, it's just not my cup of tea, end quote. Is that any better? I think that's kind of a little bit soft peddling and maybe even harsher.
It's hard to hear. But again, you know, he's in a professional situation there, though, so that's fair enough.
Wonder who that musician was.
Oh, I'm going to take a look at that surname.
Anyway, you can contribute to Text the Nation by email during the week, adamandjoe.sixmusic@bbc.co.uk, and your submission could appear in Retro Text the Nation next week. Imagine.
Imagine.
That was the end of the so-called highlights from this week's Six Music radio show. Now there's just a little time left for one final linky from the Tuba Boom men that you call Adam and Joe.
There we go. That was the podcast this week, listeners.
Oh, flipping heck. Are we back already?
Yeah, we're back already.
Oh,
and
I
of course,
a little snooze.
If you're a regular listener to the podcast, you'll know that at the end of last week's podcast, Adam revealed a dirty sexual secret of some sort of a reverie he had concerning me. I swore last week that I wouldn't listen to it. I haven't listened to it.
Have you not?
I've got no idea what it was.
You know, I've got one more thing to say about that.
I don't want to hear it. Do you remember that film 8mm starring Nicolas Cage?
Sure I do.
In which he says there are some things you can't unsee. That's what I'm getting at. I just don't want the mental image in my bonds. So thank you very much to everybody for respecting that. And you know, I'm assuming that when I left the room, actually, you probably said something silly. Do you know what I mean? Like, like you ground up a cheese straw and rubbed it on my nose or something.
No. Wasn't. No, it was pretty graphic.
So this podcast outro is going to be very clean and fresh and family friendly. None of that kind of business, right,
no.
Adam?
Listen, I'm sorry if I stepped over any kind of line last week with that.
I don't know what you did. I'm going to remain in blissful ignorance.
It was very sexy, the line.
Well, I'm flattered.
I congered over the line in a tiny sexy skirt. Ooh, look at my sexy skirt. I'm congering over the line.
I had a good look. Yep. Yeah. Thanks. So how did you feel about the show this week, Adam?
Well, I've been, to be honest with you, right, like a more intelligent person perhaps would maintain the artifice of Boggins and keep it all on a jokey level. But I've been rattled by some of the criticism that we've received about it.
The thing about us is we're too sensitive for this game.
Is it? Yeah.
Did we plan to have a show on the radio?
No, that's true. We fell into it.
We fell into it and we're too sensitive and we read all the emails and we take everything to heart.
We need some kind of DJ Sensodyne.
We do. We need to become more brusque like Richard Bacon or George Lamb or Chris Moyles.
Or Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce Springsteen. They've got a, do you know what I mean? They've got a grittiness.
Yeah, oh, but Lamb gets hurt by criticism.
Do you think?
Yeah.
No, he must be Teflon coated, though.
He is in some ways, but he's no one's immune.
Do you think? Well, that's true. But they're better at putting on a front.
Mm.
We need to put on more of a front.
Well, this takes us back to Katie Price, doesn't it? She's got the ultimate front. But even she, I believe, feels the slings and the arrows as keenly as anyone.
Mm.
And that's what my song's about.
Or maybe we just need to be paid a lot more. That would help, wouldn't it?
I don't think that does help, because then that makes you feel guilty.
Right.
I don't know. We need to talk to Chris Evans about this. He's been through it all. You know what I mean? He's got, I read an article
about it. But no, the
problem
is our listenership is so tiny
yeah.
compared to any of the DJs I've just mentioned.
Yeah, that's true.
that we really do have a serious problem. You
We're
know.
Thinking about it too much.
Too much thinking.
Too much.
Stop thinking.
Stop thinking, will you?
Yeah.
I never thought that would be something we're thinking.
It's not. We're not saying it's clever thinking.
Look at my cake.
You're still thinking.
Oh. Look at the cake.
Keyboard.
Oh, touch a keyboard. Oh, look, a Bowser keyboard.
I've got two computer mice. Throw them together.
Throw them together. Like I said, I like the sound. Look, I got the cake. I got the cake. Look, I got the cake.
Drop it on the floor.
I got the cake.
Drop it on the
floor. I'm eating a cake.
Drop it on the floor. Microphone.
I like it. The tape.
Microphone.
I like the tape. This feels better already. Come on, listeners.
Microphone.
Is this not a better show?
Microphone.
Stop thinking about everything so much. Man, you are trashing that computer, though.
Sorry. Thanks for listening, listeners. We'll be back next week.
I love you. Bye.
Bye.
If you enjoyed the Adam and Joe podcast, then why not try the John Richardson podcast? Download it now. bbc.co.uk/6music.
They're grabbing hands. Grab all they can. Everything counts in large amounts.
That was Margaret Thatcher with... Everything counts.
She was in Depeche Mode
amounts.
For a while.
She was.
In
did
the early 80s.
That? Did you know that?
Just after Vince Clarke left.
Did you know that?
Yeah, I did.
Did you?
They got Thatcher in. Everyone
really?
Knows that. Because everyone was like, what? Thatcher's joined Depeche Mode. What's that all about?
Yeah.
And
she used to produce a little sort of self-published magazine, didn't she?
Yeah.
Called... It was called The Magazine. All about that band.
Yeah.
She was very big on the indie punk scene. Bondage punk, indie bondage punk.
Yeah.
Adam and Joe
on 6 Music.